Hello and welcome to HN Pod. Today is Tuesday, August 12, 2025, and this is episode number 123.
We've got a great lineup of stories for you today, straight from the top of Hacker News. First up, Anthropic is making waves again, announcing that Claude Sonnet 4 now supports a massive 1 million token context window.
Then we'll dive into a fascinating and slightly unsettling piece from Asterisk magazine titled, Why Are There So Many Rationalist Cults? It's a look at how a community dedicated to clear thinking can sometimes go off the rails.
After that, we're heading down under, where an Australian court has found Apple and Google guilty of being anti-competitive. We'll unpack what that means and why it might be happening outside the US.
And we've got two fantastic show HN posts. The first is an incredible project where a developer built a web search engine from scratch in just 2 months using 3 billion neural embeddings.
And the second is a tool called Omnara, which lets you run and manage AI agents like Claude Code from anywhere, even your phone. So let's get into it.
First up, the big news from Anthropic. Claude Sonnet 4 now supports a 1 million token context window. For anyone keeping score, that's a fivefold increase, and it's a huge number. We're talking about the ability to process entire code bases with over 75,000 lines of code or dozens of research papers all in a single prompt.
It's a significant leap. Anthropic is positioning this for large-scale code analysis, synthesizing massive document sets, and building more powerful, context-aware agents that don't forget what you were talking about after a few turns. The pricing is interesting, too. It's higher for prompts over 200,000 tokens, which makes sense given the computational cost.
Of course, the top comment on Hacker News immediately brings us back to Earth with a healthy dose of skepticism. A user named NotThatD shares their experience, saying these tools are great for getting started on new projects or learning a new language, but when they use it with languages they already know well, it actually makes them less productive.
Right. They say the time spent crafting the perfect prompt with all the right context is often more than it would take to just write the code themselves. And the code it produces can feel a bit junior level, with hidden pitfalls that only an experienced dev would spot.
This kicked off a really good debate in the comments. Some people agreed, comparing it to the old Rails new command. It's great for scaffolding and boilerplate, but not for navigating the complexities of a messy legacy enterprise system. One commenter pointed out that for fast-moving tools like Databricks, the model's knowledge is already out of date.
But others pushed back. One user argued that Sonnet is perfectly capable of enterprise-grade code, but you have to give it enough context. If it's doing dumb things, it's because you haven't told it enough about the system. This seems to be the key takeaway. It's not magic, it's a tool, and your results depend heavily on how you use it.
Exactly. And that led to a fascinating subthread about different workflows. A user named Jeremy Hu described a process where they use the Claude desktop app with a local file system server. They just give Claude the full paths to a couple of relevant files and a high-level task. Claude then reads the files, figures out what to do, and edits them directly, maintaining the existing code patterns and style. That sounds much more powerful than just copy-pasting code into a chat window.
It really does. It's about integrating the AI into your actual development environment. And another user built on that, saying they have Claude create a multi-phase plan first, and then they tackle each phase one chat at a time. It's structured, manageable, and keeps the AI on track.
So while the headline is this massive 1 million token number, the real story from the discussion is about the evolving workflows and the craft of using these tools effectively. It's not just about what the model can do, but what you can get the model to do for you.
Let's move on to our next story, which is a bit of a change of pace. It's an article from Asterisk magazine titled, Why Are There So Many Rationalist Cults? The author, who is a rationalist themselves, explores this paradox. Why does a community founded on principles of logic and critical thinking seem to spawn these intense, high-demand groups?
It's a really thoughtful piece. The author argues that the foundational texts of the community, Eliezer Yudkowsky's The Sequences, make a sort of implicit promise. The promise is that if you master this art of rational thinking, you can solve all your problems, become brilliant and successful, and join an elite group shaping the future of humanity.
And the author's point is that this promise isn't really true, but it's incredibly appealing, especially to people who are in vulnerable positions.
people dealing with mental illness, trauma, or social isolation. They are drawn in because they want a trustworthy authority to fix them and give them a grand purpose.
The article is careful to note that the community as a whole is functional, and Yudkowsky himself shows little interest in being a cult leader. But the marketing of rationality creates the raw material for these dysfunctional groups to form around charismatic but flawed leaders.
The Hacker News comments on this were just fantastic. They really latched on to the core intellectual failure mode at play here. The top comment, from John Macon, says these groups build seemingly logical arguments on top of axioms that are either untested or just plain nonsense. They noted that the smartest people they know are profoundly unsure of their beliefs, and that certainty is suspicious.
That led to a brilliant analogy from another user, who compared it to tolerance stackup in mechanical engineering. When you assemble a bunch of parts, the small error or tolerance in each part adds up. If you're not careful, the final assembly doesn't work. In the same way, if you build a long chain of logical steps, and each step is just a little bit leaky, you can end up with runaway growth and false confidence.
Someone else called it dead reckoning, like in navigation. You can calculate your position based on your past position, speed, and direction, but if you don't periodically check in with a fixed point, with reality, you'll drift further and further off course. It's this idea that pure reason, untethered from empirical checks and intellectual humility, can lead you to very strange places.
It's a powerful critique. It suggests that the problem isn't logic itself, but a certain kind of overconfidence in one's own logical processes, especially when you start from a shaky foundation. A really thought-provoking discussion.
All right, next up, we have a story that the article link itself is broken, but the headline and the comments tell us everything we need to know. Australian court finds Apple, Google guilty of being anti-competitive.
This is a big deal, and the immediate question on Hacker News was, why Australia? Why is this happening there and not in the US, the home of these tech giants? The comments split into a few different theories.
The first theory is that other countries are feeling emboldened to take action now that the US is perceived as being in a sort of trade war with the universe, as one commenter put it. The idea is that the US might be less willing or able to protect its tech champions on the global stage.
But another, more cynical take reframed it. It's not that other countries are suddenly becoming aggressive. It's that the U.S. has been unwilling to enforce its own antitrust laws for years, due to what another commenter called implied corruption and regulatory capture.
This naturally led to a debate about the current state of the FTC under Lina Khan. Some users pointed out that she has been very active, bringing cases against Microsoft, Meta, and Amazon. Others echoed a common sentiment on Hacker News, portraying her as more of an activist with a grudge, whose cases have been weak and ultimately failed.
A user named Anthony Mouse provided some excellent context on why antitrust is so hard in the US. The original laws are very broad, so decades of court rulings have carved out specific loopholes. Big companies with expensive lawyers can structure their activities to fit neatly into those loopholes, making it very difficult for any administration to win a case. Add hyper-partisanship to the mix, and any long-term prosecution that needs to survive a change in administration is basically doomed.
There was also a fascinating, if slightly grim, strategic argument put forward that the U.S. government intentionally allows domestic monopolies to flourish because they see them as a way to ensure global tech dominance. The logic is that in a world where chip fabrication is dominated by foreign companies like TSMC and ASML, you need massive domestic players like Google and Microsoft to buy up all the chips and control the next layer of the stack.
It's a pretty stark view of geopolitics, suggesting that a competitive domestic market is a luxury you can't afford when you're competing with other nations. So a story about an Australian court ruling quickly becomes a deep dive into US legal history, regulatory capture, and global power dynamics. Classic Hacker News.
Absolutely. Now for something completely different and very cool. Our first show, HN, is a blog post titled Building a Web Search Engine from Scratch in 2 months with 3 billion neural embeddings.
This is one of those classic, ambitious Hacker News projects that just makes you say, wow. The author, Wilson Lin, was frustrated with the declining quality of search engines and decided to build his own. And he went all in. We're talking a cluster of 200 GPUs, crawling and indexing 280 million pages, and building the whole thing around semantic search.
The core idea is to move beyond keyword matching. Instead of just looking for the words you typed, it tries to understand the intent and meaning behind your query. The blog post is incredibly detailed, walking through every step of the process, from sanitizing messy HTML and chunking it into meaningful sentences, to building the massive sharded vector index.
The comments were, as you can imagine, overwhelmingly positive. People were blown away by the scope of the project and the quality of the write-up. One user immediately asked if a community-run, donation-funded search engine might actually be viable now.
And of course, the project's motivation really resonated with people. One commenter shared their story of trying to get a legitimate small business website to rank on Google, only to be outranked by spammy lead gen sites and irrelevant national services. It just highlights the problem this project is trying to solve.
The demo, when it was working, got some good feedback. One person noted that for a query like, "What are some good high-resolution ultra-wide monitors?" it still tended to favor broad-ranking pages over specialist forums, which is a common failure mode for search engines. But even that critique shows how seriously people were taking the project.
And in true Hacker News fashion, the demo link quickly went down. The comments section diagnosed it as the classic hug of death, where a flood of traffic from the front page overwhelms the server. It's almost a rite of passage for a popular show HN, a truly inspiring project.
And that brings us to our final story, another show HN that taps right into the AI agent zeitgeist. It's called Omnara, and it's a YC-backed startup building what they call an agent command center.
The problem they're solving is one that anyone who has used tools like Claude Code will immediately recognize. You give the AI a big task, it starts working, you leave your desk, and you come back an hour later to find it's been stuck for 55 minutes waiting for you to type yes or no.
Omnara fixes this. You run your Claude Code session through their wrapper, and you can monitor it from a web dashboard or a mobile app. When the agent needs your input, you get a push notification on your phone. You can respond right there, whether you're in an Uber, doing laundry, or, well, you get the idea.
The discussion on this was great because it hit on so many classic Hacker News themes. First, people saw the bigger picture. One commenter said, "This is the first step toward a future where developers are more like project managers, guiding a team of AI agents rather than writing every line of code themselves."
But then came the quintessential HN question from a user named MCOYB. Why should a hacker submit to using tools behind a SaaS offering when one can just roll their own tools? It's the ultimate developer question.
And right on cue, a bunch of users chimed in with their DIY setups, using tools like Tailscale, Termius, Zellige, and a Raspberry Pi to achieve the same thing. It was a perfect snapshot of the hacker mindset.
The founder's response was, of course, convenience. You pay the monthly fee so you don't have to build and maintain that whole stack yourself. And someone brilliantly pointed out that this entire exchange was a modern echo of the famous Hacker News comment on the original Dropbox launch, which famously said, "You can build this yourself in a weekend with a few shell scripts." That comment is now seen as a sign that you're onto something big.
It's a great story. It shows a real practical solution to a new problem created by AI tools. And the community's reaction perfectly captures the tension between the hacker's desire to build and the pragmatist's desire to just get things done.
And that's a wrap for today. It's been a day of big numbers and big ideas, from million token context windows to billion embedding search engines. We've seen how AI is getting more powerful and more integrated into our workflows, but also how the human element, whether it's providing guidance to an agent or falling prey to flawed logic, remains as important as ever.
Thanks for tuning in to HN Pod. We'll be back tomorrow with more stories from the top of Hacker News.